Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon. I want to welcome you to today's episode of the American College Experience. My name is Jason Haynes. I'm the host of this radio broadcast and also the Chief Executive Officer of the UR Tennis Network. We are so excited that you have joined us today. If this is your first time, then shame on you. You have found one of the best-kept secrets in tennis, and we're glad that you finally joined us. We like to say that we're a compliment to the Tennis Channel. We have over 1,000 hours of libraried conversations with tennis personalities. They range from the famous to the infamous, and we try each week to bring forth a new story and new people that are out there listening and wanting to listen to tennis stories. My area is the college tennis world. I'm a former collegiate coach of about 20 years. I've spent most of my time at the community college level with also some time at the Division I level on the men's side. If you believe that you can talk tennis for an hour, if you think that you can do this on a weekly basis, then we need to visit. And I'm always looking for new ideas for new shows. I was visiting with a couple of young gentlemen out on the East Coast last week, and we are ironing out the details for their show that's about to upcome. And then I have a young man over in the West Coast area, the Arizona area, that is looking to come on board. So we're always looking for new perspectives on our sport. We will give you a voice. We'll give you an hour a week that you can talk about tennis. We just ask that you show up each week. We ask that you be on our team. We've got a lot of people out there that like to talk tennis, and they do so as an individual, but I, as a college tennis coach, realize that tennis is actually a team sport, and when you get everybody moving in the right direction, you can do wondrous things with your team, and that's what we're trying to do here with over 1,000 hours of broadcasting. We also have two other shows currently. We have Lisa Stone, who does Parenting Aces on Monday morning at 11 o'clock, and she stays up with all things junior tennis and raising a junior in the USTA tennis world. And then before I go on the air at 11 o'clock today, we have American Tennis with Coach Chuck Creasy. Chuck is a guy that you can probably trust about what's going on with American tennis, and he covers all avenues in the arena. And he tries to tackle what's right and what's wrong and tackle the issues. So we're so glad that he is on board with us. Author, camp director, college coach, international success story. He is a wonderful, giving man, and we're so glad that he's associated with us. On today's program, we have Coach Chase Hodges. Chase is the men's and women's coach at Georgia Gwinnett. University of Georgia is, Gwinnett is the NAI champion this year, and I say that champion being singular and both plural. Chase was able to coach both his men and women team to the national championship title. Fortunate in the small college world, if you get to do this, pull off the rare double. It happened twice this year with ASA and Coach Brian Slack winning the National Junior College Athletic Association title on both the men and the women. And then Coach Hodges here winning it with Georgia Gwinnett on the National Alliance of Intercollegiate Athletics. And so excited that he's going to join us today. He's got a great story to tell. And he's made Georgia Gwinnett very proud in a short period of time. There are a few other things that are happening out there, and we've been keeping abreast of those issues. If you're a college sports fan, you should be aware that the Ed O'Bannon video game trial is happening right now. You can keep up with it on ESPN.com if you'd like. And let me tell you, there is some interesting news that's coming out of these college presidents' mouths on the stand. And it's some scary things. This football and basketball greediness has got to stop somewhere. And maybe the courts can help us out. But I won't bore you with details. Next week on the program, we're going to have Mr. J.P. Weber. J.P. and I are going to hash out some of these things that are going on in the NCAA Division I world. I know J.P., a former collegiate coach himself, has a great opinion about this, and looking forward to visiting with him on that. The other interesting news that's coming out, and I don't know how I missed this, but I'm going to announce this, that the ITA Women's Collegiate Tennis Hall of Fame has announced its 2014 inductees. The ceremony will be held November 15th of this year at the College of William & Mary. They've got six inductees, and we're excited that one of those inductees has been on our program a couple of times. A couple of these names you may recognize, Katrina Adams. Katrina played at Northwestern University, also left and had a great pro career. She represented the U.S. very well, and she's been on television as a commentator for the Tennis Channel since 2003. She does a lot of wonderful things for American tennis. Stacy Margolin. She played at the University of Southern Cal. Cecilia Martinez. She played at San Francisco State University, also a pioneer of the current women's professional tour. Bob Myers, he's from Southern Illinois University at Edwardsville. He coached there until 1989. Four straight Division II championships. He coached 32 players to All-American status. Nice to see the small colleges represented. Lindsay Morse, she played at UC Irvine in the 1970s. And we're so excited about this guy, Coach Jeff Moore. Jeff, you will realize that he's been on the show a couple of times. Coached the University of Texas women's teams for 23 seasons, also from the Redlands, University of Redlands and University of Colorado, led the squad to the NCAA championship every year of his coaching career in Texas. They captured the championship titles in 93 and 95 and had two other runner-up finishes and three other Final Four showings. This guy was good at what he did, and we're so glad that he's chosen to come on our show a couple times and let us pick his brain. So we're going to get to our guest today. I believe this is him, so I'm going to check in with him and make sure that he's there. Coach Hodges, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, very good, Chase. I appreciate you coming on the air today. You know, we spend an hour a week talking about college tennis. And before we get into the depths of your successful season, Chase, I hate to break this to you, but there aren't going to be many people out there that know who you are that listen to the show. So if we could start off with some biographical information and just kind of fill people in with what's going on over there at Georgia Gwinnett.
No problem, Jason. Hey, thanks for having me on the show. Really, Georgia Gwinnett, we're in our second year. Last year we started the program. In 2012, we weren't able in our first season to compete in the postseason. And this year was our first year of eligibility here. And, you know, we're located right outside of Atlanta, Georgia, in beautiful Gwinnett County in Lawrenceville, Georgia. And, you know, here we are with two national championships in our first year of eligibility. And couldn't be happier, Jason. It was a tremendous year, just being able to represent Georgia Gwinnett College and a new university that was started in 2006, and here we are 8 years later with some national championships. So it was a tremendous year, and hopefully we can do it again next year.
Yeah, Chase, now you immediately brought some success to Georgia Gwinnett, and I'm sure they're excited about that. Let's talk about you just a little bit before we get into that season.
Sure.
You play some college tennis before?
Yeah, I played my first 2 years at NC State in Raleigh, North Carolina. And then after my first two seasons there, I transferred to the University of North Carolina at Wilmington and got my bachelor's degree there at UNCW. And after getting my bachelor's, I immediately went into my graduate program and finished my master's degree in 2001 from UNCW. And then got my first head coaching job at Longwood University in Farmville, Virginia. Then had my next head coaching job at University of North Carolina, Asheville. Then after that, took the head job at Drake University. After that, eventually went as the head coach at Georgia State University right here in Atlanta, and which led me to where I am right now at Georgia Gwinnett. So, you know, mostly been at the Division I level throughout most of my career. So the transition to the NAIA was a bit of a change, but something that I'm extremely happy that I did. And just all the experience at all those universities has really played a major role in kind of where I am today. And, you know, just being in collegiate athletics and having the opportunity to coach student athletes on a daily basis, you know, I feel like I couldn't have a better job. So I really love what I do. And, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with everywhere that I've been previously.
Yeah. Now, Chase, I got to ask, as a college athlete,
sure,
when you were going through this as a tennis player, did you think, I sure do like this tennis coaching gig that I see here. Is this something I want to do, or how did it come about?
Yeah, I mean, I came from a coaching family. My dad was a collegiate basketball coach at the Division II level, a school called Lenoir Ryan College. I grew up in Hickory, North Carolina. So just being around a coach, and my uncle, Bob Hodges, was also a coach. He was a Hall of Fame athlete at East Carolina University, and actually coached Rick Barnes in basketball, who's the coach at University of Texas. Just being around that environment, my dad is still in coaching, and you know, I think it just kind of is in your blood, and it's just something that I really always wanted to do sort of heading into college. I kind of knew that collegiate coaching would be my future, and, you know, just having the experience at NC State and UNCW for me really put me in a position where it only confirmed that this is what I want to do, and I really didn't waste any time getting into the profession. You know, I had my first head coaching job at the age of 22 years old, so you know, it was a situation where I didn't, you know, really think anything other than that this was what I wanted to do.
Well, Chase, now you've had experience in both the Division I level, you've had experience at the NAIA level, other small colleges out there.
Sure.
Kind of take us through that. I mean, it sounds like you started small college and went big college, now back at small college?
Yeah, I mean, really, I think it's all about the opportunity that you have. You know, every choice that I've made from a career standpoint has been really based on, can I be successful? And, you know, I feel like every school that I've had an opportunity to coach at, really, you know, we've had opportunities to get programs nationally ranked. I've led every school I've been out to a national ranking, which is great. You know, I've had a lot of help along the way, and you know, I really like a challenge, and, you know, it really kind of takes me to where I am now at Georgia Gwinnett. You know, no other time are you going to have an opportunity to start a program from the ground up. You know, July 1st, 2012, I'll never forget it, my first day on the job. I didn't have any tennis balls, any tennis rackets. I had zero tennis players. We had absolutely nothing, Jason. So, you know, it was a huge challenge, and that's something that I've always looked for in a job. You know, I don't really find any satisfaction out of going somewhere that's always had success and just maintaining it. You know, I really like a challenge, and this opportunity here at Georgia Gwinnett has been the biggest challenge for me in my coaching career, because, you know, you literally start from nothing and you try to build it.
Yeah, Chase, I can completely identify with that. My mm-hmm. pedigree was Tyler Junior College. This was a place in the junior college world that stands out, and was offered a position down in another community college in Baytown. And Lakeland, Texas, and people were like, where is that? What is that place? And I, like you, like the challenge part of this, of taking something that no one, or going somewhere that no one's really heard of, and then building a program up to where people want to be a part of it. Is that the same deal with you, Chase?
Yeah, we're definitely on the same page there. You know, I think, you know, just even right now, the recruiting has, you know, even though, you know, we're not a household name yet in the college tennis world, you know, we're getting our name out there, and people are slowly but surely starting to hear of George Gwinnett and the Grizzly Tennis Program and what we've been able to accomplish. And, you know, it feels good when you basically start that from scratch, and all the players, you know, they're making history every day in this school's history. And, you know, it's 50 years from now, 60 years from now, when, you know, we're not even, you know, maybe even on this earth at that point, you know, you're going to be able to play a part in starting a program and making history. And that's something that I think is really unique and neat in terms of not many people were able to do that. And all the kids that we've had here, all the student athletes that we've had here have really bought in these last 2 years and really understand that this is something special. You know, unfortunately, Jason, in a time where college tennis programs are getting cut and dismissed, you know, for us to add two programs and back in 2012 really speaks to the volume of what Georgia Gwinnett's trying to really take us to another level in terms of adding programs and really trying to be successful. And, you know, it's a really unique situation, and, you know, hopefully we can continue to grow college tennis, not only at Georgia Gwinnett, but across the board. And it's a great sport, and hopefully we can maintain to grow it.
Well, Chase, I agree. It's unusual, and that's why I'm so excited to get to visit with you today. This is a young school. This is a young program, and there's a lot of success that's happened to it very quickly. A team of firsts, I would say, right?
Definitely. I mean, we only have six sports right now. We have men and women's tennis, baseball, softball, and men and women's soccer. So, you know, we have six sports right now, and we're going to continue to grow. The school back in 2006 opened with 118 students, and here we are in 2014, and we're over 10,000 students. So it's really growing rapidly. You know, Gwinnett County as a whole has over 1 million residents in this county alone. So, you know, we're in a situation where we're the only four-year university or four-year college in the county. So we feel like, you know, we have something special here and that we can really grow. You know, it's a situation really, you know, for me when I took the job, and our athletic director, Dr. Darren Wilson, has done a tremendous job really hiring a very impressive coaching staff. And, you know, it's just a situation for us where we really feel like the sky's the limit. And, you know, we've been able to have success already at the NAIA level. And, you know, our goal is just to continue that success. And, you know, who knows what the future will hold. But it's just really exciting time to be a part of GGC, that's for sure.
Well, Chase, you're right on with that sky's the limit comment. I mean, 2 years into this, you guys are national champion on both the men's and the women's side. And before we talk about Georgia Gwinnett, let me ask you this. Now, if I remember right, Georgia State, that was not a half-bad NCAA Division I program while you were there. Is that correct?
That's correct. You know, we were nationally ranked every year. You know, I took that position in 2009, and, you know, it was once again, that was a challenge, which was something that I think any coach really enjoys a challenge. The program had lost 37 matches in a row in the regular season, and we were able to turn that around immediately. And, you know, in that first season, we actually had the biggest turnaround in college tennis history, finished 15-6. And the last two seasons I was there, we had over 20 wins seasons. And, you know, I think we were ranked as high as, you know, 51 in the nation or something like that. But, you know, that program, just being in Atlanta, Georgia State, you know, you're always going to be able to attract great student athletes from around the world. Atlanta is such a great area to play tennis and to travel in and out of. So, you know, Georgia State was definitely the 4 years that I spent there was, or 3 years that I spent there were 3 years that I really enjoyed, that's for sure.
Yeah, Chase, and I thought that was the case. It seems to be that this thing is following you around, and you're building programs. It's a big pat on the back for your pedigree and what you're doing. Now, Georgia Gwinnett, well, like you said, just a young school here. So, and you've told us how many kids are there. I mean, why do kids want to go to Georgia Gwinnett? Is it a local-based school? Are you attracting internationals besides the athletes? Well, what's happening over there?
Well, we are attracting quite a few international athletes, you know, and that's something that, you know, with our men's soccer program and obviously our men and women's tennis programs, we're contributing a great deal to our international student population. Georgia Gwinnett as a whole is just really growing. We're getting ready to start a nursing program at the college, which is going to attract a lot more students. You know, it's adding more and more academic programs, which are high-caliber programs, which will attract many students, not only from the Gwinnett County area and the state of Georgia, but really around the United States. It's a situation, you know, Jason, where I think that the biggest thing that we have going for us is the fact that so many people, when they come and visit the school, they have no idea that, number one, it even existed, and then when they leave this campus, they're in utter awe of what we're doing over here. And I think that's really what's most exciting is, you know, if you ever have a chance to come by the campus and visit, I think you'll be amazed at really what's going on with the buildings and on-campus housing and the dorms and everything that we have, the academic buildings, the athletic facilities. You know, we were able to purchase a phenomenal tennis facility where we have 12 hard courts, 4 clay courts. The tennis teams have their own weight room, have our own training room, have our own study lounge, have our own restrooms and locker rooms. Really, we have everything that we need to be successful. And, you know, I think that that's the groundwork for anyone. You got to have the resources to be successful. And if you have those, then the sky's the limit. And we definitely feel that we are in a position where we can compete at the highest level. And, you know, that's attributed to the president here at Georgia Gwinnett all the way down. And, you know, hopefully we can continue what we've started here.
You know, and I love that story. As you and I visited before we came on the air, I mean, you guys, they got really serious about a tennis facility. They just went out and grabbed one off the market. I mean, and you're in charge of that facility. Your team has its own home. A lot of programs out there struggling, you know, with a couple of courts here and there. You guys have a great facility.
We got a great facility. You know, the Georgia Gwinnett, you know, purchased Collins Hill Athletic Club, which was a type country club, and the school stepped up and purchased it, and here we are with the, you know, less than a mile from campus. The players, it's easy access to and from the facility. You know, we have really everything that we need with 16 courts. You can play any time of night with the lights and our own weight room, and really just everything that you could dream of. You know, at Georgia State, you know, we were playing out of a public park, which made things difficult. You know, here, you know, I think it's just a great situation to kind of have your own home base. You know, you have something that you can call your home. You have something that the players can really put pride into. And that's something that we feel at the NAI level, we feel like our facility is as good as any facility in the country. And really against any Division One or Two or Division Three programs, we feel like the situation that we have here is absolutely outstanding. So, you know, all in all, you know, I think, you know, being able to run the facility and do a lot of things that we do here, you know, I think it's just a win-win for everybody involved. And, you know, at first, you know, I think, you know, a lot of people, you know, going Division One to NAI, you know, I think for me, that was the biggest thing to get over with from my personal standpoint. But, you know, I couldn't be more thrilled with the decision I made to come here. And, you know, I have no regrets whatsoever and hope to be here for a very long time.
Chase, now help us understand that jump. NCAA Division
Sure.
One has its own set of rules, NAIA a different set. What are some of the strengths and weaknesses
Sure.
that in this move?
What's some strengths and weaknesses with the move? Is that what you said?
Yeah, whenever you go, when you're at a Division One school, I mean we understand
Sure.
that you're limited on the hours you can work out, the dates that you can play,
yeah,
you know, that sort
Sure.
of thing. You move to the NAIA level,
Sure.
it has a different rule. So what was the difference, and how did it help, and even did it hinder you in any way?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is, you know, to the you know, to the most student athletes, you know, when I'm recruiting men's and women's players, they ask, you know, the NCAA Division I, it's more well known than the NAI. You know, the NAI is just something that a lot of times you really have to explain to the student athletes what their organization is. And once you get past that, you know, it's pretty much a done deal in terms of they understand. It's just the name recognition, I think, for NAI is something that we're trying to improve on a daily basis and really get our name out there. It really is a high level of tennis, as you know. There's a lot of great teams in the NAI. And, you know, I think that, you know, that's been the biggest challenge in regards to that is, you know, NCAA Division I, you know, they have a little bit more name recognition. So that's been something that you just simply have to overcome. In regards to eligibility and things of that nature, really, the NAI, you know, you're able to, after you graduate, you're able to participate for 12 months after your high school graduation date. You're able to participate up until that first day of the 13th month. So you have a little bit more time to decide, whereas the NCAA Division I is 6 months. So, you know, there's some minor changes between the two, but all in all, you're looking for the best tennis players in the United States or in the world that can really help your program be successful, and that's kind of what we've been doing here.
Well, Chase, you coach both the men and the women there at Georgia Gwinnett.
Yeah.
I got to ask, do you have them practice together? Do you practice apart? How does that work for you?
Well, luckily, I've had a phenomenal assistant coach, Lauren Meyer, who has really done a phenomenal job. She's been more involved with our women's program. So having an assistant coach that can really take a leadership role, and that's something that she's done with the women's program, has been vital to our success. No, our practices are separate. The women practice together, the men practice together. You know, it really involves, I have some volunteer assistants, Courtney Rutherford, Alex Ruiz, Adam Jackson, had some guys that have really played a major part in our success. And, you know, this definitely isn't all about me. I've had a lot of help with both programs. And, you know, I think that's necessary in order to do things right. You know, you got to have people that are willing to go the extra mile to develop your student athletes. And, you know, if you're a one-man show with two programs, there's no way I could enjoy the amount of success we've had. You know, it's a total team effort, and, you know, I've been very lucky to have a group of individuals that have bought into the program just as much as me. And, you know, the men and women, both programs that we have here, you know, I think it's really important that, you know, that, and being involved with both programs, it's just really important to have that type of support system in place. You know, I've been a lot of places where maybe the men and the women's programs, you know, they have different coaches, so it's completely separate. And here, you know, I think it's been a big advantage for us is both of our teams really support each other and they come together and, you know, they're all about each team having success. And, you know, I think that's been really important for us.
Chase, you know, you at the NAI level, you know, when looking at your schedule, you don't play a real heavy fall season at all, just like the regionals and then a couple of tournaments there. Is that by design, or are you not getting invited anywhere because you're so good?
We play our regional. We host an event called the Grizzly Open, which this year will be October 17th through the 19th. Last fall was our first time doing that. We had over 20 universities attend that event. Hopefully we'll have another big turnout. You know, real fortunate on the men's side, Coach Diaz up at University of Georgia invites us over to his Southern Intercollegiate event, so we'll be playing that. That's only about 40 minutes away in Athens, so we'll go over there. We'll also obviously host our event and then go down to Georgia Tech this fall to pick up an event over there. So in the fall, you know, we're playing Division I events. You know, we're putting ourselves in a position where we're going to be prepared for the spring. So, you know, we're looking at about 3 or 4 fall events. It's pretty similar to what I've done at other schools, you know, so it's not a big change there. Maybe the biggest challenge that I may have is the spring schedule, just trying to put together a schedule where we can be challenged and put ourselves in a position where, We can really improve. There's a lot of great teams out there, and hopefully we can get an opportunity to face some of those teams and see what can happen. So that's kind of where we are right now.
Porter Gwinnett in an athletic conference, and how does that work for you?
No, we're actually an independent, so we're not in a conference. The way that it works is for the conference event this year, basically all the independent teams meet at a location. This year we met in New Orleans at Xavier University, and basically you play your conference tournament out, and the winner gets an automatic bid to the national event. So the way the NAI works is the 24 teams qualify for the NAI national tournament. Some of those teams are made up of automatic qualifiers, and then they'll do at-large bursts for the rest of the teams. Our women's team actually did not win the conference tournament and received an at-large berth before they won the national championship. So, very rarely in tennis do you see many teams win a national championship and not win their conference. On the men's side, we were able to capture both of those, but that's kind of how it works for us.
Well, for those women, I would say that somebody looks pretty smart by offering you guys an at-large bid, huh?
Yeah, I mean, we were happy to receive the at-large bid, and we went in and found a way to get it done on the women's side, and we still went in as the number two seed overall. So the team that that beat us in our conference tournament was Xavier, and they were the number one seed in the tournament. So it was kind of a tough little conference tournament, you could say, to have the top two teams in the country play in the conference final. But, we were able to get in, and, once you get in, it's all about performing well, and, the women's team was able to really step up and play well in crucial moments, and couldn't be more proud of what they accomplished.
Okay, so we're going to talk about that national championship on the women's side first, but that spring schedule there, it looks like you've got some interdivisional opponents, and is that by design?
Sure. We play at Division I, Division II, Division III, and NAIA teams. We play them all. We don't discriminate. We'll play anybody, anywhere, anytime. So, it's not really by design. It's more so a situation where we're trying to play the best possible teams that we can play. And, regardless of what division anybody's from, we want our student-athletes to experience the best possible student-athlete experience that they can have. So that's kind of where we are. We're lucky to be in a great town here in Lawrenceville in the Atlanta area, because there's a lot of great college tennis in this region, so you don't have to really travel too far to find good competition. So that's a real big benefit for us, just the simple fact of our location.
Well, I have Coach Avi Keeble from Barry on a couple of weeks ago, and he's a great guest, a Division II national champion with the women.
Sure.
on tonight. And he's finding it harder the better he gets to schedule good opponents. You being a young guy, I guess they're willing to play you.
It's not easy. In fact, I think we're going to try to work something out with Barry in the spring of 2015. He's done a phenomenal job down there. It's one of those situations where you got to build on your contacts and your relationships. I've been lucky to meet a lot of great college tennis coaches throughout the country and establish good relationships with each one of them. So I think that's had a lot to do with the fact that we've been able to pick up some matches that normally we wouldn't be able to play. But you just got to continue to foster those relationships, and I think that has a lot to do with it in the sport of college tennis, is coaches in general, working ways out for each other's teams to play each other. And, I think that's something that we'll continue to do here. I know I will. But just like, with Barry or George Gwinnett or whoever you are, I think that all in all, each coach, I think that the number one motive for a coach should be to put together the best schedule they can, so their players are challenged on a daily basis. And that's something that, I'm striving to do every day for my team. So, hopefully 2015 is still a work in progress with the schedule. We've been – Scott Kidd over at Troy has been a big big help. We're going to play two Division One tournaments, spring tournaments, at Troy, which will be great. And we're going to pick up a lot of high quality Division Two matches. Last year we were able to, on the men's side, to play Armstrong Atlantic, who's one of the best Division Two programs in the country. And we're going to continue to play the teams that are willing to play us. And hopefully year by year the schedule will get stronger and stronger.
Yeah, I love to hear about the interdivisional play, Chase. That's how we survived there at Lee, getting the small D1s, sometimes nationally programs and things like that. It's so important in college tennis to have that flexibility, to have that that mixing of divisions. I think that's what gives small colleges life. And I even think that the big colleges miss the boat on a lot of it a lot of times, and how beneficial it is to their program.
I couldn't agree more. I think, I think one thing from a college tennis community, regardless of the size of a school, whether you're 1,000 students or 40,000 students, I think it really just needs to come back to the experience for the student athletes. That's really what I'm all about, just trying to put my players and my student athletes in a position where, they're feeling challenged, and it's not a situation where, they're able to really not improve their games. And, that's kind of where we're at. And, regardless of the size of the school, we're hoping to play as many teams as we can. So regardless of division, like you said.
Yeah, very good, Chase. Now, I'm looking at this women's schedule. You didn't play until Groundhog Day of 2014. Do you bring your kids in early, or do you let them come in when school starts, practice a couple of weeks, and then get going? Do you have an indoor season? Do you do anything indoors?
Well, we start classes normally around January 8th, around that time frame, and we typically start practice the first day of spring class. So, the way that we typically in the spring season, we want to put ourselves in a position, we're at Georgia State or even at Drake University, we were playing matches in mid-January. One thing about the NAIA is our national tournament goes all the way until mid-May. It stretches into the third week of May. So my mindset with the schedule this year was the season is going to be long as it is. It's going to be extremely long. So we didn't play any matches in January. We waited until February to start play. It gave us an opportunity to, get our feet wet with practice, get a couple of weeks training in before we went into that first match. And, I knew that once we played that first match, we were extremely prepared, and we weren't really rushed into the season. And, that's one difference, I think, at the Division I level. I used to kind of rush into the season, and, you got new players coming in January. You got players that are coming back from the holiday break. You're just rushing to maybe get a kid eligible. It's just a whole assortment of things that you're trying to put together on your plate so that you can be ready for a mid-January match. And I'm trying to get away from that now and kind of use that month to really, get the players prepared for February, and so they can understand that, the season's going to go all the way out until most of May. So there's no sense in really rushing into it. Let's just grind our way, and eventually we'll have success. But there's no reason to rush into it, that's for sure.
Well, Coach, with these ladies, I mean, they were ready to go. It looks like five straight matches where you guys didn't lose a match. And then finally when you play Xavier in the middle of February, you win, but you lose two. Mm-hmm. And then the next one, 9-0. So, I mean, this was a great start when you look at it.
It was a great start. And one of the reasons we were able to have that much success, Jason, is really simple. I mean, we brought in four players in January on the women's side that literally made a huge impact on our team. It's kind of rolling the dice. It's risky to do that. I don't typically like to do that, to bring that many players in January that are going to actually be in your lineup. But our team was pretty much made in January. And, with the players that we brought in the middle of the year. And that was our success. Without those players, we wouldn't have attained the success that we had. And, you know, we came out of the gates extremely strong, and, you know, we experienced some success early on, started the year ranked number 20 in the nation in the NAIA, and then I believe by that first week of March, we were number 2 in the nation, and then eventually got up to 1 and then dropped back to 2 after the conference tournament. So our women's team kind of came out of nowhere, and which was great, and, you know, gradually moved up in the rankings, and, you know, it was a lot of fun to see.
Yeah, Coach, now you're 18-4 overall on the year. Two of your losses came to the same program, who ended up having a pretty good year themselves there at Emory.
Correct.
At first, you lost 7-2, and then you go back and lose 6-3 in April. What type is that Emory team?
Well, they're the Division III national champs. You know, they got a good program. We played them on the men and women's side. My men were fortunate enough to beat them, and then their women beat us twice. And, you know, I felt like we were an improved team, even though the score really doesn't show it. And from 7-2 to 6-3, that is a slight improvement. But, you know, we were a much better team the second time that we faced them. And, you know, like I said earlier, being able to face a team 20 minutes away that's extremely high level, that's a national champion at the Division III level, it's a huge advantage for us, you know, just being able to get matches like that. And, you know, Coach Bryant does a great job down there with the women's program, and we're going to continue to play Emory every season, and hopefully next year we'll have a little different result. But, you know, it was great preparation for us because I think that those matches really helped us once we got into our national tournament because, you know, we experienced a loss and we kind of can learn from that. You know, the women with 4 losses on the season, you know, I think we learned from all 4 of those losses and, you know, 2 to Emory. What's funny is I don't remember any of the wins, but I remember all 4 losses like it was yesterday. But the two losses to Emory, the loss to an Armstrong team, which is, I believe, finished 2nd in Division II in the nation. And then we had another loss to Xavier, who, you know, we played them twice, 1-1 and lost 1. So, you know, all in all, the schedule set us up well to be successful in the national tournament.
Yeah, the toughest loss of the year, Coach, and you mentioned you only had 4, but that Armstrong Atlantic team must be pretty solid, 9-0 loss, didn't it?
Yeah, we got beat pretty bad there. They got a very good team. You know, I think the experience factor was the biggest difference there. You know, that was a match where really the only match of the whole season where, you know, I just didn't feel like we were in the match from start to finish. So, you know, you got to give them credit. They're a much better program or much better team, and we can only hope to get to that level eventually. But that's kind of my goal and hope is that we can eventually get to that level. So we'll see if it happens.
Coach, now you get to that independent tournament, and we've got a mutual friend in Coach Chuck Creasy, and Chuck always says you got breakdowns before breakthroughs, Jason. And you know, when I'm here at that Xavier match, you lose that one 5-3. Is that one of those breakdowns before breakthroughs, Chase?
I told the women after we lost that match, and, you know, I hate to sound cliche, but that's the reason we won the national tournament is that loss right there. You know, between me and you, if we lose that tournament or if we win that match, I don't think we win the national tournament because I think the girls go in as the number one seed, maybe a little bit overconfident, and I think we get upset in the national tournament. I tell you, that Xavier loss that we had in the conference final is the entire reason we won the national tournament because it put the girls back to work. They got hungrier. They got more out of practice. They started to work harder. They started to realize that, hey, if we're going to win a national championship, we're going to have to get better. And that loss right there was the turning point of our season. I know it was a late turn because it was a late April match, but it really turned our mental focus and just the entire team psyche really turned into – how are we going to win this tournament now? And, you know, the girls just really took ownership and worked extremely hard. And, you know, when we had our opportunity in the national tournament, we took it. So it was the best thing that could have happened to us.
Well, Coach, so you've been out to Mobile, Alabama to play the NAIA National Championships. And this is a team format tournament. So do you play the doubles first or the singles first?
Well, 9-point format, you play the doubles first, and then you finish with the singles. So you play the doubles out to completion with an 8-game pro set, and then as soon as a team reaches 5 points, the match is called. And that's the format. And that was my first time ever going to Mobile, Alabama. So I was really impressed with that tennis facility. Scott Novak does a great job directing that facility. And just a really impressive event. You know, it's a great host, and NAIA does a wonderful job of sponsoring that event, and we really enjoyed our time there.
Yeah,
obviously.
There's some courts out
that way. Hey, yeah, 60 courts. I mean, it's an insane amount of courts. I'm not sure the exact number, but there are an insane amount of courts out there, and, you know, it's a situation where, you know, you can run an event like a national tournament and get it done in a reasonable amount of time because of the course, that many courts. So, you know, they do a great job hosting the event.
Yeah, Coach, now looking at the results here, that tournament got progressively harder as you went on. I mean, your quarterfinal match against, STAD, which is Southern College of Arts and Design there in Savannah, 5-1, and then Lindsey Wilson 5-2. Is that the case? Were they just tougher as they went along, Coach?
Yeah, that Lindsey Wilson match, I think maybe would have been a 5-4 match if we played it out. The SCAD match in the quarterfinals, I think every match went to three sets, maybe with the exception of one match. You know, it was an extremely every match was extremely difficult. You know, the girls continued to get victories one after another, and really it just culminated in that final with a 5-4 victory over Embry-Riddle, who, you know, Embry-Riddle had beaten Auburn Montgomery in the quarterfinals, and then they beat the number one seed Xavier in the semifinals. So we knew we had our work cut out for us heading into that final, and really played a phenomenal match to win that 5-4. It couldn't have been more dramatic. The match was tied 4-4 and came down to number 5 singles. We had a freshman playing against a senior, and, you know, luckily our girl pulled it out. But it was an amazing experience, an experience I'll never forget for the rest of my life. So it was absolutely awesome.
And Coach, now, how did the team celebrate? Did you get a Gatorade bath, or how did that work?
Well, that particular match, we stormed the court, and Inace Costa Magna, a freshman that we have on our team from Argentina, was fortunate enough to clinch, and it was just straight celebration mode for about 20 minutes. I don't even remember. It was straight euphoria. You know, words really can't do it justice, just that moment when you win a national championship, all the thoughts going through your head. And really, it was I didn't get Gatorade bath, which is a good thing because the men were playing literally right after that match. But it was a day I'll never forget. It was definitely the best day in my life from a career standpoint, no doubt about it. That day I'll never forget.
Coach, we're going to talk about how good that day was as we move on to the men's team here now. Your men's team, 21-0 on the year, Coach. You travel with the men and the women together, or do they travel separately? How does that work?
When we have a common opponent, we will travel together. However, you know, the schedule doesn't always work out that way. Some programs may not have a women's program, some may not have a men's. So, you know, depending on the schedule, if it's a common opponent and both teams are able to play one university, we'll travel together. If it's not, we'll be separate.
Well, Coach, now this was very close to not being an undefeated season. You know, in February you play Lander. Lander, a very good team. You squeak away with a 5-1 there. How did that work out?
That was a match that, you know, my hairline definitely crept back a little bit more during that match. We got down 3-0, which is not where you want to be. We lost all three doubles matches. We were playing at Lander. Was our poorest doubles performance of our season. Just did not come out with the energy needed to win that match. Got down 3-0, and, you know, I had some choice words for him before we started the singles, and really took 5 out of 6 in singles against a Lander team that had been top 5 Division II pretty much the whole season. Great program there. That match right there was could have gone either way, and we got the win and really springboarded us in terms of confidence. A lot of guys won key matches there, and that was a match that I think we really created a just great team unity. The team really came together, and that was a key win for us this season, that's for sure.
Yeah, now a couple of weeks later, then you play, I'm going to guess, they're a tough Kenyan team. You squeak away with a 5-4 win there too, though.
Yeah, they got a. That one's a little misleading. That match wasn't as dramatic. I think we were up 5-2, and then maybe lost 2 10-point breakers or something like that to make that a 5-4 match. Not as dramatic as that Lander match. You know, I got a lot of respect for Kenyon. They got one of the top Division III teams, but I never really always felt, believe it or not, I regardless of the 5-4 score, I kind of felt confident throughout the match there. So, you know, a little different than being down 3-0, which is what we experienced against Lander.
Yeah, and then the last tough, or what I look at as the tough match of the season was that Armstrong Atlantic match, though.
Armstrong Atlantic, that was a big one. You know, they had won 76 matches in a row at home, so to go into their place and break that streak was a phenomenal experience for us. I got a ton of respect for Armstrong Atlantic, Simon Earnshaw, who is now just taking the head coaching job at NC State, did a phenomenal job at Armstrong. He won 9 national championships down there. And to beat a program like Armstrong, I really felt like, you know, our men's team has arrived. You know, we felt, you know, like that was kind of our signature win on the season to take a team out on the road, especially one that has done nothing but win for 4 or 5 straight years. We felt like that one kind of put our confidence level at a point where our men's team really felt like, hey, this could be a perfect season.
Now, Armstrong has some big shoes to fill there. We've had Simon on the show. He's a great, great interview, and we'll get him back when he gets settled in up mm-hmm. there in North Carolina State. But, hey, Coach, those are some big shoes to fill there.
Yeah, I don't think you can't fill the shoes at Armstrong. Whoever comes into that job, I think, is just going to have to kind of create their own identity. But, you know, 9 national championships and what he's done for that program, you know, that's something that, personally, I don't think you can replace that, you know, what he's done. So it's going to be a tough, you know, tough position to walk into because, you know, he's done such a phenomenal job there. So, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see how that turns out. But, you know, the good situation for whoever moves into that role is you're taking over a program that's had an enormous amount of success. So you know that it can be done there. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Brett, now – you make it to the independent tournament in New Orleans. And, Coach, I don't know how y'all schedule that, but New Orleans has got to be a great place to have a tournament, right?
Great place. Love New Orleans. You just got to keep the guys focused. That's the big thing there. You got to, you know, with New Orleans and the many distractions and all the things going on there, you know, we try to make it all about tennis and a hotel room. And, you know, that's kind of what we did. And, you know, the guys went out there and real business-like approach and didn't really get tested too much in that event, and were able to win that conference tournament, which was, you know, landed us, you know, the number 3 seed. You know, we even though we were undefeated after the regular season, we still had 2 teams that Emory Riddle at number 1 and Auburn Montgomery that had been ranked above us all year. So we knew going into the Nationals that the number 3 seed was pretty much what we were going to be, and that's exactly what happened.
Coach, this NAIA National Championship. And you've got hard duty here. You're going back and forth. The men are playing. The women are playing. Back and
right.
forth. I mean, these are long days.
Very long days. You know, that week, you know, I don't want to use the word stressed because I wasn't stressed in any way, but it was more so, you know, a sense of euphoria when we won it, also a sense of relief because – you know, coaching, you know, when you're on court, you know, 8-9 hours a day coaching for an entire week, you know, it's difficult mentally. You know, I was a little drained. I was definitely drained after the event. And, you know, it was a situation where, you know, you got to be, from a coaching standpoint, you know, you got to be precise. And You got a lot of decisions that you need to make throughout an event. You know, we had some injuries and had to make some lineup adjustments, and you know, you just need to make sure that you know you're 110% ready to have your team compete, and not only just one team but both teams. And you know, with the different travel and the different start times, you know, it's really key that you have a great staff. And like I said, with Lauren Meyer and Alex Ruiz and Adam Jackson and Courtney Rutherford, you know, I had a lot of help, which was vital to our success, that's for sure. Very happy to get through that week.
Coach, you go into this NAIA tournament, and being a small college guy, you know, I'm sure there's some people that are going off this Georgia Gwinnett team. I don't know anything about them, and here they're pretty good, but, you know, they've only been around a couple of years. How good can they be? You go up against Graceland, Cumberland. These guys have been NAIA programs for a while now, Coach. You just ran through them.
Well, we were definitely that team at the tournament that everybody was kind of watching, because they'd heard about us, but they really hadn't seen us. And, you know, early on in the tournament, you know, in the round of 16, you know, we played Graceland and got a 5-1 victory, and really wasn't too dramatic, which was nice. And then, you know, played Cumberland in the national quarterfinal and got through them as well. So, you know, we felt really good. You know, once we got to the semifinal round, we wanted to play Auburn Montgomery, and you know, we wanted to play Emory Riddle, and you know, because those were the two teams that were ranked ahead of us, and you know, we were very motivated to go out there and prove what we were made of. And you know, the draw worked out perfectly for our men's team to play the top teams and to see what we could do.
Coach, history was not on your side. I mean, Auburn, Montgomery, Embry-Riddle. You put Embry-Riddle in both the finals. I mean, you want to talk about, in my eyes, kind of a David versus Goliath scenario here, 2 years versus a strong history in small college tennis. It's a big match on those days, big two matches, Coach.
Auburn, Montgomery, Embry-Riddle, or, you know, they're the class act of the NAIA. They've been winning national championships year after year. You know, to play two programs with as much history and tradition that they have, and to beat those two programs for us was huge. And you know, we couldn't have asked for better teams to play. And you know, they're both well coached, and you know, I was extremely happy with how we performed. And you know, it, like I said, if you were writing a script, you couldn't have written, you know, you couldn't have written it any better than the way it played out.
Yeah, now Chase, you know, this is a situation here where, as you mentioned earlier, with your women, you finish Embry-Riddle in a 5-4 fashion, and then what do you get, 10, 15, 20, 30 minutes, and then you got to play the men?
Correct, yeah. You're looking at about 20 minutes, and, you know, you got to turn around and do it all over again. And luckily, you know, Dave Pascal and the coach at Embry-Riddle does a phenomenal job with both programs, and luckily for me and our team, the men's match was not as dramatic as the women's match. I don't know if I could have handled another 5-4 match like we have with the women back-to-back. I don't know. It would have been extremely, you know, tiring. I don't know if I would have had anything left in the tank after that women's match. But, you know, luckily we took care of business pretty good fashion in that men's final. I was very impressed with the way our team played. Played great.
Well, Coach, now in that men's match, did you get all three doubles, or how did that work for you?
We went up 2-1. We went up 2-1, and, you know, they had a really good team at number one doubles, one of the best teams in the country. I believe that team, they went to the ITA indoors, the national indoors, and I believe they beat UCLA's number one team in that event and advanced to the quarterfinals of the national, which features all the divisions of college tennis, and lost at one doubles, were able to get wins at 2 and 3 to really be up 2-1, and then that turned the attention to the singles matches. And you know, we got our first win at, I believe it was at number 3 singles with Matias Hatim. That put us in a position where We were up 3-1, and then Connor Clements actually put us up 3-1 at number 5 singles. He's our American from Charleston, South Carolina. He picked up a big win for us. And then, of course, Matias at 3, and then Bruno Taberti, our senior, clinched the match for us at number 2 singles. So it finished as a 5-1 match. The other matches that were still on were competitive, so don't really know how that would have turned out. But, you know, to get out of there with a 5-1 win felt really good. Felt great.
Coach, now we're going to lose some live listeners, and I'm going to keep you on a little bit longer for the podcast portion of this. And
okay.
I truly admire you, and I admire these coaches that do both the men's and the women's. But, Chase, I don't know how you go back to doing just one team. I mean, this has cured the excitement here. National Championship Day, you've got both the men and the women playing. This is a college coach's dream.
It was a dream, and it was a dream come true. It turned out to be. You couldn't ask. I remember waking up on the day of the final for the men and the women's final and just thinking to myself, you know, kind of pinching myself, like, is this really happening? And will we, you know, do we have a chance to bring home 2 national championships in one day? And, you know, it came true. It really did. And, you know, all I can think about now is let's try to do it again. So, you know, it's funny how coaches think. And, you know, I really am looking forward to, you know, I haven't really had a chance to reflect and just enjoy the 2 that we just won. Hopefully I'll get to do that here in the next couple weeks when I finish these tennis camps that we got going on. But, you know, I just want to reflect and enjoy it and then get amped up for next year and try to do it again. And, you know, that's kind of what you want to do. And, you know, hopefully we can put ourselves in that position again. And, you know, I think one thing that you do realize is how rare those days are, and you know, I may never be in that position again. You never know. So, you know, you really want to enjoy it and understand that those days don't come around every day. So, hopefully, we'll have a chance at it again. Though we'll see.
Well, Chase, now you know, this is an interesting situation here. You've got both trophies in hand. You've lived the coach's dream. I got to ask, were there turning points in the season for both the men and the women in which you said, no, I think we've got a chance here?
Yeah. On the men's side, when we beat Armstrong, I honestly felt in my heart that we were going to win the national championship. I just felt that type of win mentally really put ourselves in a position where we felt we could beat anybody. So that was kind of the turning point on the men's side. And the turning point on the women's side was actually that loss there. Even though it was late in the season, I truly felt that, and I know it's strange, but I honestly felt that even at that time, that was the best thing that happened to us. You know, it's not like I wanted the team to lose that match in any way, but in the back of my mind, I was thinking, hey, if we lost this match, it could be a very good thing. And it turned out that that was the case. And those would definitely be the 2 where I felt like, hey, we can win this thing. It's very rare that you say that after you lose, but that's the reality of what happened with the women's program this year in my eyes.
Well, Chase, now, and I'm not, you know, I sent out those questions to you about the 5 questions. I'm going to have
sure.
you back on if we can agree to that. And next
sure.
year, before I want to get you on maybe before the regionals or the small college championship, I bet you got some good stories there. But, Chase, I mean, I'm like you. I enjoyed those national championships for about 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, okay, let's do it again. I mean, it sounds like we're of the same cloth here, buddy.
We are. I think so. I mean, that's you know, there's always going to be somebody getting better. There's always going to be somebody that's going to be adding players and strengthening their team. And, you know, if you just sit back and, you know, rest on your laurels or what you've accomplished, then you're going to get beat. So, you know, it's one of those things where you got to be moving forward. It's funny, somebody asked me the other day, on our men's side, they asked, you know, if we had some players coming in, and I said, absolutely. And they said, how's the team looking? And I honestly think our team next year is going to be stronger than this year. And they, you know, kind of were like, well, you don't need to be stronger. You know, you guys were able to have the perfect season and win the national tournament, and, you know, you have to get stronger because everybody else is going to be getting stronger. So that's kind of the mindset that I have, and I think you have that as well, is your team has got to get better every year regardless of how much success you had the previous year. We just want to keep making steps forward, and I feel like if we can keep getting better every season, then we can achieve some great success here.
I mean, in a sense, we kind of adopt the number one player in the world and the ATP and WTA tours and mindset here. You know, we've got to work harder now that we're on top than we ever worked when we weren't.
Exactly. And, you know, if you stop, I mean, it's just reality. If you don't, you're going to get beat, and you're not going to maintain the success. And, you know, I know, and I'll be telling my teams this, every team's going to want to beat us, you know, in the NAIA that much more simply because we're going to be the defending champs, and you better be on your A game because, you know, they're going to be coming after you. You know, we realize we're going to have a target on our back the whole season, and teams are going to be coming after us, but that means we just got to get that much better. So, you know, we'll see what happens this season. I feel good about the team that we have coming back and the players that we're trying to bring in and some of them that have committed, but you never know until you get that group in, and, you know, hopefully you can stay healthy and not have injuries and all the things that, you know, you need to be healthy, you can maintain it. So we'll see what happens. I think we got a great chance to have success, though. We'll see.
Well, Chase, you mentioned you're doing summer camps right now, then going to take a couple of weeks to enjoy those national championships. Anything else going on this summer with Coach Hodges?
Well, like you said, these camps, you know, finishing them up this week, this will be the third week of camp that I've completed. So, you know, starting next week, just not having camp is just opens up your day a lot. You know, you have more time to do other things. And, you know, I have my six-year-old daughter here with me now and just getting to spend some quality time with her. And, you know, being from North Carolina, I always try to head back to Wrightsville Beach, which is an area that I love, and, you know, I'll be heading there to kind of relax and try to, you know, recharge the batteries for next season, and that's kind of where I'm at mentally, and, you know, there's nothing better than a beach to recharge, so that's kind of where I'm going to be heading, and, you know, try to enjoy a little bit of downtime and then gear back up for the fall season.
Well, Chase, now
I'm not doing any extravagant trip, though. I wish I don't have anything extravagant planned. Just a beach in North Carolina. I'm pretty low maintenance in that regard. I don't need to go anywhere extravagant, that's for sure.
That sounds like a pretty good trip, Coach, and take that little girl with
fun.
You.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Coach, now, at this point of the show, I let my coaches give out their website address, an email address, if some of my fans or the fans of the show here want to, you know, listen in or to keep up with your program or get in touch with you, would you be comfortable doing that?
Absolutely, yeah. The best way to reach me, you can visit grizzlyathletics.com. That's the official athletic website of Georgia Gwinnett College. That's Grizzly, G-R-I-Z-Z-L-Y, athletics.com. And anybody out there that would like to email me, love to communicate with any of the fans of the show, my email address, real simple. It's my name, Chase Hodges, C-H-A-S-E-H-O-D-G-E-S at ggc.edu. So Chase Hodges at ggc.edu. Shoot me an email, and we can go from there.
Well, Chase, it's been fun getting to know you today and being aware of what's going on there at Georgia Gwinnett. You're doing an outstanding job in the tennis world, and I just want you to keep up the good work.
Hey, I appreciate you having me, and look forward to coming back on the show. Really enjoyed it. Thanks for all that you've done to help support our programs, and, you know, I'm going to be logging into Blog Talk Radio as much as humanly possible to check it out, and really appreciate what you're doing to grow college tennis, and I think we got a wonderful sport. It's just a matter of really getting it out to the masses and letting everybody see what we've already seen. So thank you for having me.
You bet, Chase. It's a blast to get to visit with you, you coaches. I've been there, been in the trenches with you guys, and know, just like you said, it is a great sport. And I want to wish you a great summer and hit some tennis balls every once in a while, Coach.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Have a great day.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. That is Coach Chase Hodges. Chase is the men's and women's coach there at a pretty young program in Jordan Gwinnett, but you can tell in that young man's, and I say that with respect, voice, he is passionate about coaching college tennis, and he is doing a wonderful job with that school over there, and I imagine in the years to come we'll hear many good things about Georgia Gwinnett and Coach Hodges. And just so excited that you did listen in today. And we'll keep bringing you these national champion stories as the summer goes along. We'll mix in a few others as we do this as well. And like I said earlier in the broadcast, next week, Mr. J.P. Weber. J.P. is a former host of ours, and we're going to get out here and talk about this Division I stuff that's going on. So tune in for that. And as usual, I would really prefer that you get outside at some point today and go hit some tennis balls. It's been a joy talking to you today. Tell your friends about us, and we'll see you back here next week live. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.